listening to CKUT. The following is a previously broadcast program. Stay tuned.
Nugget dans Porsche, 911, mais j'ai quand même un trou dans le torse. Lui là. Dis-moi si tu crois encore. Dis-moi si je peux encore déverrouiller ton cœur. Dis-moi si tu m'en veux encore pour la soirée d'hier. 20-23, y'a plus rien qui est comme hier. Je rentre à la maison, j'ai les chaînes, les colliers. Money man, baby, j'suis en ville. Message, te dis que j'suis en vie. J'me demande pourquoi tu m'en veux. C'est la trap life, baby, c'est la trap life. Ok, young nigga dehors dans la nuit. Avec mes associés à la mort, à la vie. Sur le corner, baby, j'fais ma shit. Attends, moi j'rentre pas tard, promis, j'rentre pas tard, yeah, yeah.
Ça sert à rien. Je te connais déjà. Nos corps sont chauds, mais ton cœur est froid. Tu me dis que c'est du love, mais tu délires encore. Oh, tu me dis que c'est du
pas vraiment, tu connais que ce que je veux que tu vois de moi. Émotion scellée sous un cadenas. Sous ta jupe, y'a du magma, je flex everyday comme les gars de chipset. J'suis un MJ dans le club. Lumière s'allume quand je marche. Frappe, fait tes dégâts, ça me demande c'est qui le plug. Pendant que t'es là, tu me demandes ça rentre à quelle heure. Fuck, c'est quoi cette life? Depuis quand on est passé sur l'autre side? J'suis là, j'vois tes messages. J'suis sorry, j'suis sorry.
Ça sert à rien, j'te connais déjà. Nos corps sont chauds, mais ton cœur est froid. Tu me dis que c'est du
listening to CKUT 91.3 FM in Montreal and on CKUT.ca on the web. This is Antex Miguel. I am Titouan. And it is Monday, February 26, 2024. It is 11.03. And this week we are again going to talk about the Floor Fellows and more specifically the termination of the Floor Fellow position in McGill residences. So last Thursday, or the week before actually, we started hearing that McGill was terminating such position, which are upper year students that live in residence with first years and other students in residence to just provide support and guidance and just be a person on site that can react to any kind of situation or respond to any question and be right there for the students. So, this week our local news journalist, Jules, talked with Graham Scott, who is Amuse VP floor fellow, so Amuse the workers union at McGill, one of them. And yeah, if you want to hear more of that, we did another interview last week, so yeah, that would be on our website cket.ca. But right now, let's listen to Jules and her interview.
All right, you are back and listening to Off the Hour, Local Journalism Initiative Roundup here on CKUT, broadcast on 90.3 FM and online at ckut.ca. Last week, a shocking decision from McGill will leave first years in rookie hands. On Thursday, the university told the Association of McGill University Support Employees, also known as AMUSE, that it was getting rid of floor fellows. Floor fellows are McGill's version of residence advisors. They live in residence halls, offer workshops, and one-on-one support to the thousands of students who choose to live in dorms. McGill says it chose not to hire floor fellows back following an internal review. Instead, they'll be increasing the number of residence life facilitator positions, which do not require students to live on campus. Joining me to discuss the layoffs is Graham Scott, Vice President of Floor Fellows at AMUSE. Graham, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
Can you walk me through just pretty quickly, like, what happened on Thursday? How did you and these workers find out about the layoffs?
Well, it came as a huge surprise. So on Thursday, we received an email, all 65 of the floor fellows, around 4 o'clock, saying that there was going to be an important update to the floor fellow role happening over Zoom at 6 o'clock. So we tuned into the Zoom meeting. And we were basically told in 8 minutes that our job was being eliminated and that they would not be providing any more further answers at the time.
Whoa, okay. So it was all just like, you know, you're going to be continuing for what, a month and a half more and then nothing else.
Mm-hmm. So the floor fellow contract runs concurrent to the academic year when we have, you know, first years living in residence, as that's, you know, we're there to support them. So basically the contract will expire in the first week of April. And then from there, that will be, according to McGill, the end of floor fellows.
And did that come as a shock to you?
It came as a huge shock for us. You know, floor fellows are one of the fundamental pillars of the McGill student experience. And we have been for 30 years, going back to the 1990s. You know, this is a really old and really storied institution. And the impact that floor fellows have, you know, really, really can't be understated. So absolutely, we were really surprised to hear this news.
Yeah, I think, you know, for those who aren't familiar with res life at McGill, why is the floor fellow position so unique? Because I think it is different from other RA positions at universities, but, you know, it's something that is a bit like insider baseball. If you're not a student at McGill, if you haven't lived in residence, you might not know the difference or be able to kind of put your finger on that. But can you tell me more?
Absolutely. So what I can talk you through really quick is a really brief outline of the floor fellow role and what floor fellows do. So really, it's an incredibly broad portfolio of services we provide. So beyond just obviously running events and building community and sort of decorating the hall, our primary responsibilities are to complete check-ins. So every 2 weeks, we need to be checking in on each one of the residents that's under our charge, you know, be that having a conversation with them, seeing them, you know, having a, you know, a virtual, like a text message conversation with them every 2 weeks. So we are keeping tabs on their well-being. Beyond that, we are trained in a really, you know, pretty extensive array of mental health and sort of emergency care resources. So we are trained in receiving disclosures of sexual violence. We are trained in administering naloxone. We are trained in recognizing the signs of overdose. We are trained in recognizing the signs of intoxication and what to do in those scenarios. You know, we're trained in how to recognize self-harm, managing suicidality, how to approach those issues in a community-based context. We're all CPR first aid certified. So, you know, beyond just being this, you know, this community support role, we really do a lot of the time perform really on the ground, flexible, first responder work in these residences.
Yeah. And, you know, for those who haven't gone to university anywhere else, other kind of RA positions, they don't do half of what floor fellows do at McGill. And a big difference that I've heard people talk about is just when folks come to McGill, they're often 18, they're legal here, and there's a culture of kind of drinking and partying that floor fellows are there to make sure happens safely so that nobody gets hurt in a way where, you know, at other universities, much of the approach is based around abstinence, and that floor fellows often offer other kinds of supports, whether that's around even just feeling okay as a racialized student or gender and sexuality things, that there's kind of a more fulsome role there. Is that fair to say? And I guess, how does that square with this new position that McGill is looking to increase, this RLF position, residence life facilitator?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you mentioned, you know, dealing with issues of, you know, racialized students supporting people in these different positions. And so, you know, obviously, yes, we are trained pretty extensively in EDI. So that is also something that's under our purview, like you mentioned. In terms of, you know, what makes floor fellows different from a res advisor position at, you know, other universities, is that floor fellows are primarily not a disciplinary role. So our job is not to go around performing room checks or inspections. Our job is not to be the cops in res. Our job is to be peer support. And actually, when we go back to 2014, which was when floor fellows first unionized, a key reason that we did unionize was because the floor fellows at the time sensed that McGill was moving away from harm reduction and toward a more abstinence-based, sort of prevention-based approach in residence. And floor fellows, you know, as the staff who actually live in those residences, support those first years day to day, we knew very well that moving away from a harm reductive approach was going to have real tangible negative consequences.
And so, is that what you're seeing now with this switch to the residence life facilitator positions? Is there anything else the university has done in recent years since floor fellows have unionized to kind of push this even further?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's a twofold question. So when we talk about the residence life facilitator position, it really needs to be stressed how much this is not a replacement for floor fellows. So, as a residence life facilitator, you know, you look at the job description that's up on the McGill website, their only purview is events. So the only thing that the residence life facilitator team organizes is, you know, outings, community events, Halloween pumpkin carving, stuff like that. Which obviously I don't want to denigrate that. That's, you know, that's a really crucial service, but it doesn't even begin to compare to the vast amount of services and support that floor fellows offer. And I think it really needs to be stressed that floor fellows are live-in staff. So we are down the hall. We are a text message or a knock away pretty much at all times, when there's an emergency, when someone just needs to talk, when someone needs advice, when someone needs help navigating McGill bureaucracy, when someone needs help navigating, you know, the Quebec government or the Canadian government. And I think it really needs to be brought home that, you know, we can talk about these other services that McGill has brought up in when they're citing, you know, they've cited in this decision. So they've talked about the wellness hub, the local wellness advisors, OSFERS, formerly SACOMS, the Office of the Dean of Students. And what really differentiates floor fellows from all of those services is that floor fellows live there. So we have our finger on the pulse of these residents' well-being all the time. And in order to access support from a floor fellow as a first year, you don't need to book online. You know, you don't need to go through with entering your email and doing the two-step authentication. And
you just send a text.
Yeah, you just send a text. You just knock on the door. You know, you don't need to book a virtual appointment for 2 weeks away. So I think that with the elimination of floor fellows, this really crucial suite of services, flexible, on the ground, personalized, intimate support that we provide is going to be lost.
Yeah. And why do you think that McGill then is laying floor fellows off? You know, they say they conducted an internal review and the decision was made, and I quote, to better align with the growing and changing needs of students and the evolving demographic of our student resident population, end quote. And they've said also that the RLFs are also supporting upper year and grad students and residents. So maybe that's a reference to that. It's not clear, you know. What does that sort of mean to you, and what are the other factors that might be at play here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that it has to be noted that McGill has not shared any of those, the results of this internal review with us. We have not seen those. And what I also have to say is that, you know, there was no open consultation. So there was no open discussion about the role that floor fellows play. There was no consultation with the McGill community, with the residents, with the floor fellows, and especially with any of the other myriad of, you know, McGill services that we work alongside. So in residences specifically, we work very closely with the protection patrollers. We work very closely with the porters. But beyond that, as floor fellows, we all have, you know, an individual professional relationship with the local wellness advisors who work in residence. We're able to offer first years those referrals. Part of floor fellow training is what's called the services roundtable, where all of the McGill services, so the Wellness Hub, Financial Aid, First People's House, you know, the Black Students Network, all of these sort of networks and student offices will come by and explain to the floor fellows, here's what we do, here's how you can get in touch with us. So, you know, it's, I think it's really hard to look at that and conclude that floor fellows have become outmoded because there's these other services. I think that sometimes, you know, as a resident in these buildings, it's really difficult to understand exactly what floor fellows do. And the example that really brought this home to me was when I was in my first year living in Solihull. And my floor fellow, you know, had a really tremendous impact on me, even though I didn't actually really know her very well, and I had no idea what she was doing. You know, I think I actually skipped my hall meeting in first year. I was that kind of person, you know, I turned out okay. But my floor fellow was there for me two or three times throughout the year when I needed someone to talk to, or I just needed to know someone cared about me. And that made such a tremendous difference to my experience in that first year where I was living alone in that really transitional period. And then the funny thing was, in the coming years, when I actually became her colleague, I got an insight into all of the crazy stuff that she had been dealing with on my floor while I was living there. Really serious stuff, stuff like eating disorders, you know, serious mental health concerns, conflict resolution. So there was a lot of really serious stuff that was going on behind the scenes that I didn't see. And it's really important to remember that, you know, like all people who work in the mental health community support sphere, we're actually bound by really strict requirements for confidentiality. So a lot of the time, when we're doing our job, and especially if we're doing our job well, that means that you don't actually see a lot of what we're doing.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, in AI, they talk about the doorman fallacy, which is basically like you automate the job of a doorman and you think, okay, it's somebody who opens the doors, maybe adds a little bit of security. We can do this with a computer, with artificial intelligence. But what you don't think about is all the other ways in which, you know, they're keeping an eye on things. They're seeing what needs to be fixed, who's coming and going. They're there for people to come and chat with and find resources about the building, you know, and the kind of thinking in that is, well, you can sometimes lose more money than you gain by getting rid of these key roles, especially if you don't understand everything about how they work. Mm-hmm. And I guess that brings me to the big financial pressure, right, that McGill is under right now because of the out-of-province tuition hikes. Although they haven't said this is the reason they're cutting the floor fellow position, you know, it's worth asking whether it's related. Floor fellows are paid at McGill, they're unionized, but, you know, am I right in thinking that the residence life facilitators are also paid and unionized? I'm wondering then, is there any kind of financial incentive for the university to switch from around 65 floor fellows to, I guess, fewer RLFs, around 45? But apart from the number, you know, is there kind of a financial motive here, or is it just these other things that we've been talking about?
Yeah, well, it's hard to speculate. Obviously, we haven't, you know, McGill has not made us privy to their books, so we can't look behind the scenes and know what they're thinking. I mean, what I can say on that is that financial pressure on the university absolutely does not eliminate any of the needs or this crucial role that floor fellows fill. And in fact, when we look at actually how the floor fellow position is compensated, I think that I would argue, and a lot of people would argue, that floor fellows generate a lot of tangible and intangible value for the university. So floor fellows are actually giving McGill a really tremendous bang for their buck. So, you know, aside from being paid only for 13 hours a week, despite this being basically a full-time live-in position, we're compensated primarily through receiving subsidized housing. So it's important to clarify, we don't receive free housing. We actually pay for our housing. We are charged the maximum that an employer can charge an employee for employer-provided housing, given in the Act Respecting Labor Standards. And part of the reason that we receive subsidized housing is because being a live-in resource and being there and being accessible is a key part of our job. So when you're working, you know, a more conventional 9-to-5 job, your employer is supplying you with like a desk and a work computer and an office. Those are not considered kind of perks or like free things that the employer is giving you. Those are just basic tools to do the job. And having a room and in this residence and being part of the community, that is just a key part of this job. So, you know, on the broad spectrum, when we look at, you know, McGill has this team of highly dedicated, highly trained, highly flexible and easy to mobilize staff that are doing, you know, a huge variety of roles in the residences. And we're primarily compensated through room and board. And you compare that to, you know, hiring 45 new staff who, you know, despite actually being paid for a similar number of hours, you know, RLFs are going to be paid for between 10 and 20 hours a week. They're being paid basically the same amount of wages, but they're performing a way smaller, list of roles and list of services, and they're way less available. I think that, you know, purely from, you know, a financial perspective of how can we generate the most value, you know, tangible and intangible for our residents, how can we enrich these lives the most, how can we be looking out for them the most, I think that floor fellows are, you know, a really cost-effective solution for the university. You know, there's a reason that almost all major universities in North America with an extensive residence system have live-in support staff.
Yeah.
It's because it works.
It's interesting, especially because, you know, Principal Deepsaney has said that applications to McGill are down by 20% this year. So it is a kind of, it's an interesting time to try and be innovating and trying something new in residence. And we'll have to see, obviously, how it goes. But just to wrap up, you know, what are the next steps for the union? Is there any recourse that you as casual workers have in the wake of this? You know, it's not so much, I guess, a layoff as just the university saying, we're not going to hire you back. So is there anything that the union is thinking about doing here?
Mm-hmm. So we're looking into it, you know, a bunch of different directions right now. I'm very happy to say that the Public Service Alliance of Canada, of which we are a component, has mobilized really spectacularly to help us. And we're looking into all the options available. But I think that, you know, beyond just kind of the legal and, you know, union side of this discussion, we've received hundreds of pieces of individual testimony that have come pouring in from McGill residents and parents and community members going back to the 1990s, personally attesting to the value of floor fellows. You know, testimony saying, my floor fellow saved my life. I watched my floor fellow save my friends' lives. I was there when I saw my floor fellow, you know, stop me from dropping out. And, you know, we've received hundreds of pieces of testimony to that effect. We've had people who worked at McGill 10 years ago, you know, in the mental health sphere, in the resident sphere, reach out to us, asking what they can do to help overturn this decision. We've had, people in other departments at McGill who work alongside the floor fellows who are really concerned about this decision. So I think all things considered, what we want to be focusing on right now is leveraging this vast, influx of support that we've received in order to generate dialogue with McGill so that we can find a middle ground that preserves, you know, what we consider to be the really essential and indelible role that floor fellows provide that just can't be replaced by staff who are not live-in.
All right. Well, we will be watching that as it progresses. Thank you so much, Graham, for coming on.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
And you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CKUT.ca on the web. This is All Things McGill. I am Titouan. It is 11:24. That was a discussion by our local news journalist, Jules, who talked with Graham Scott, who is a floor fellow at McGill. And they talked about the determination of such position at the end of the semester, and as announced by McGill 2 weeks ago now. The other story that we have today is the shutdown that was organized by SPHR and other pro-Palestinian groups last Thursday, I want to say, February 22nd. And yeah, they blocked Bronsman's building, which is one of Dizotel's building at McGill University, to protest the faculty and the university's link with Israel. And Wendy reported on that from the News Collective here at CKUT. So let's listen to that segment.
Thursday, February 22nd, a coalition of students and student groups blocked all entrances to the Bronfman building from 8 a.m. until building closure in protest of Dizotel's exchange program called the Startup Nation. Nobody successfully crossed the picket line the entire day, and CKUT spoke to some of the picketers on the scene.
So actually here today we're here as a coalition of student groups, so including SPHR McGill, IJV, Divest, members of ACSEM, and grad students for Palestine. And essentially over 70 students have shut down the Bronfman building to reiterate once again that there will be no business or classes as usual during the ongoing genocide that has killed over 30,000 Palestinians. We have shut down the Dizotel Faculty of Management specifically today. Because it has a long history of complicity. It's complicit since it hosts an exchange program with Israel, including the Startup Ecosystem Trip, which goes to the Hebrew University. And this university actually works closely with the Zionist military, developing their weapons and strategies of terrorism to be used against Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza. But our demands as a whole remain divestment. Our university invests $20 million in companies that profit off of the occupation of our land, but also companies like Elbit Systems, Lockheed Martin, Thales, and Safran, who manufacture the very weapons being used to murder and genocide Palestinians with impunity. So today, actually, the Board of Governors are meeting, and the Board of Governors is responsible precisely in investing these $20 million that manufacture the weapons being used against our people. Our university has taken a very clear pro-Zionist and pro-genocide stance, and the students have evidently and democratically articulated that they refuse to have their tuition money misused to bankroll Zionist crimes, and that they stand with the struggle for liberation no matter what.
The Startup Nation like mantra, it's like essentially like it's supposed to normalize like the state of Israel as this like new like up and coming booming nation, and it completely like erases like the history of genocide and Palestinian like Israeli occupation. So that's what we're targeting today. That's why the Dizotel faculty was the target. We have to make ourselves unavoidable at this point, and we will continue to do so past today.
You guys have been picketing since 8 a.m. And has there been any like confrontations with professors or students?
They've been extremely violent. Like, we've had people lunge at children like around. We've had people grab our like protesters. We've had like faculty members and students. I mean, like, it's just like, it's honestly disgusting. But like,
that's
the momentum alive. Like, join the student movement. Like, it's not over. There's so much complicity around us. We're students in an institution that has disgusting like ties with Israel, and like so long as we are here, like you have a duty to like consistently show up for Palestine.
here's another student who was at the shutdown. They were handing out flyers about the Faculty of Education's complicity in funding genocide.
Research the Sylvan Adams Sports Science Institute and make your... if you don't like it, please raise awareness about it and let the Faculty of Education know that you will not let that whole operation go uninhibited. I'm an undergrad student in the Faculty of Education, and I'm here with Education Students for Palestine and Recess Collective, and I'm here today because we believe in divestment on campus, and because our faculty in particular accepted a $30 million donation from a Zionist billionaire 2 years ago, and has used that money to establish a partnership with Tel Aviv University, which legitimizes the settler state of so-called Israel. Yeah, we just couldn't believe that, you know, a place where we train most of the English-speaking teachers in Quebec wouldn't have anything to say about this, and that it would actively silence us about it. And so we just decided to form a group and go for it. And we're taking all our cues from, you know, SPHR McGill on campus, who are doing incredible work, and we intend to support them until Palestine is free. I think most people don't really know anything about our faculty, and understandably, we are physically located kind of far from the rest of campus. We're up on McTavish near Pine. We have a lot of Zionist faculty, and our department has not said a single thing about 5,000 school children having been murdered by a military force backed by the U.S., so we're in the process of organizing right now, but we have experienced censorship in the department, coming from the dean's office in particular. So we've been struggling, but we are in the process. We do have the support of other groups on campus, and we're in the process of building a campaign. Yeah, a picket or a sit-in will happen at the Faculty of Education.
Ton forfait cellulaire pour écouter ton ami ventiler sur ses parents et sur son acné?
Tellement.
Avec ton écoute, tu as de l'avenir en santé et services sociaux. Trouve ta place sur québec.ca/carrière en santé. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
Sweaty and depressed.
And we are back. You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CKUT.ca on the web. This is All Things Miguel. I am Titouan. And the song you just heard was At the Time by the group Grinwig. And the very first song, I forgot to say, was Real Love by Charlotte Cardin. I love that EP, Une Semaine à Paris. Back to the news. Miguel was indeed shut down, or at least the Bronzeman building, as Wendy was telling us and reported. We are going to continue with Miguel News. We have another segment by our local news journalist who reported on the hunger strike that is currently being undertaken by, or that some students are doing, still in protest of Miguel links with Israel. So we will listen to that right now.
You're listening to CKUT, broadcast on 90.3 FM in Montreal and online worldwide at ckut.ca. I'm Jules Bigel. It's been just over 4 months since October 7th. In those 4 months, almost 30,000 people have died in Gaza, according to estimates from their Ministry of Health. Now, Israel has launched a bombardment campaign of Rafah, a sanctuary and refugee camp in the south of Gaza, where over 1 million people have fled. It may feel like a long way away from Montreal, but students at McGill say that the university's ties to companies operating in Israel and the West Bank, and to academic institutions on those lands as well, make McGill complicit. That's why they've launched a hunger strike. Starting Monday, around a dozen students on McGill campus will get their sustenance from liquids, things like broth, water, and coffee, in protest of McGill's refusal to implement BDS. That's boycott, divestment, and sanctions. I speak with two of the hunger strikers, who go by the names Rox and Emma. This is for their safety, as this kind of pro-Palestinian activism is often met with doxing and recrimination. They joined me in studio at CKUT, but you can find them on McGill campus, outside the James Administration Building, or in the Red Path Library on the first floor. Here's our conversation.
Hi, you can call me Rox, and that's that.
Yes, hi. For the purpose of this interview, I'll be going by Emma. We're both students at McGill.
Yeah, can you tell me, just, you know, in broad strokes, what are you in strike over? What's going on this week?
Well, it's going to go on for as long as the demands aren't met, and the demands are maybe, for to some, not simple, but for us it is pretty simple. We want a full divestment, and we want an academic boycott to be put in place, and we want McGill to honor those demands, and so we are on hunger strike until those demands are met.
We have indefinite hunger strikers, so people who are not stopping until the demands are met. But we also have relay hunger strikers for students who want to do just a few days at a time and to get as much support as possible. And of course, we have a bunch of students helping us. We have a care team, outreach team.
Yeah. And in terms of the hunger strike itself, are you guys both on indefinite or are you on the relay strike?
Me personally, I'm an indefinite striker, so I haven't been eating since before midnight on February the 19th. So I haven't been eating for, I don't know, close to 48 hours now.
I am currently doing care work and managing a bit with the socials, and I'm hoping to go on an indefinite hunger strike soon enough myself as well.
I know that you're drinking water and broth as well to, you know, make sure that you don't collapse. But this is a really huge decision and a huge step. I'm wondering if you both can tell me about, you know, how it got to this point where the McGill administration has been so resistant to boycott and divestment efforts that, you know, you felt that this was the step to take.
Well, basically, there's been protests on campus for years now. There's been efforts for years now to raise awareness about the apartheid in Palestine and occupied Palestine, with the genocide that started that we should say intensified on October 7th. These efforts were ramped up. There was a referendum passed where 78% of undergraduate students voted for a policy against genocide, which included asking our administration to fully divest and to academically boycott Israeli apartheid, just like we did with South Africa back in 1986. And just now in February, graduates also overwhelmingly voted at the PGSS for a similar policy, again asking for administration to meet these demands. And so it's reached a point where students have clearly asked for it, or there's been protests on campus. There's been all sorts of groups on campus that have showed support and solidarity, but our administration ignores us. And given the urgency of the situation, given that children are without food, water, humanitarian aid, electricity, right now all throughout Gaza, given that there's about 10,000 Palestinians that are currently held hostage in a military court, given that this apartheid has been going on for many decades now, we felt that it was an appropriate action to take to put our bodies on the line and to do so in solidarity with the Palestinians undergoing the genocide right now, in order to get results as soon as possible from our administration.
Yeah, and I know that you have a statement, right, from a Palestinian student who is involved in your campaign that you were looking to share. You know, maybe now is a time to make that heard as well.
Yes, okay. So we have a statement from this student. As a Palestinian McGill student with family in Gaza, I have been having an extremely difficult time with my studies. On my way to a midterm exam in the fall, I received a phone call from my mother telling me that my cousin and his two young daughters, ages 7 and 5, were killed in an airstrike in Khan Yunis. Needless to say, I performed poorly on the exam. This was not helped by the countless emails by the McGill administration, both supporting Israel's occupation and demonizing Palestinian advocacy on campus. I no longer felt safe on campus. McGill's $20 million investments in the Israeli occupation and the genocide of my family and people. It is not ethical to continue paying tuition at McGill. Like any student, I just want to get an education. I also don't want my education to be funding a genocide, especially when it is a genocide that has killed over 25 members of my family, all within the safe zones of Gaza, safe zones in quotation. I am participating in the hunger strike because we have exhausted all our options when it comes to demanding the McGill administration to stop their funding and support of a genocidal occupation. We as students will be heard and will be taken seriously. My family in Gaza have not eaten in 4 months. They are starving. McGill is paying. It is time for us to starve in solidarity. It feels wrong for us to eat while Palestinians are starving. And McGill is investing $20 million annually to keep them hungry.
What jumps out at me, I mean, among the many things in that statement, is this $20 million figure, right? And this is what BDS is all about, is boycott institutions who have ties to Israel, especially academic. D is for divest, right? These investments in Israeli companies or companies that are, you know, operating in illegal settlements, and then sanctions, which is sort of outside of what McGill can do, though, you know, if it took a strong stance, obviously that could count as a sanction. Can you tell me more about the kinds of ties, you know, those $20 million, those academic exchanges, that are the exact thing that is prompting you to go on this hunger strike?
Yes. This has already been outlined previously. We're not the ones who came up with this list of companies. For example, McGill invests $515,000 in Lockheed Martin, a weapons manufacturer, in Airbus Aerospace, Thales SA, $1.5 million and $1.6 million respectively. These are all weapon manufacturing companies. There are others such as RBC, which has itself shares in mass surveillance system that provides AI tools to the Israeli military. So all these different companies, whether directly or indirectly, are supporting the current apartheid and the current genocide of Palestinians. We also on our list have these four universities: Ben-Gurion University, Hebrew University of Jerusalem, Technion Israel Institute of Technology, and Tel Aviv University. So to different extents, these universities either heavily invest in research and development for the Israeli military, or they've themselves participated in occupying land by literally building their universities upon Palestinian land that's not supposed to be within Israel. So yeah, these are some of the academic ties. And one more I would mention is that we have these two classes in Organic Bio and Digital Faculty of Management. It's kind of the same class but combined. It's the Comparing Startup Ecosystems, and in the Faculty of Engineering, Building a Winning Business Plan, so FAC 501, Org 434, and Finance 434. These are all basically contribute to what's called tech washing, where technology is considered as this neutral force of progress, when in reality, this technology is being developed to further the oppression of Palestinians. So these are sort of some of the ties that we would like for our university to cut.
Yeah, and the, you know, the line has sort of been that they just want a safe and respectful discourse on campus, this kind of like neutrality, right, from the administration. And that's why they're saying, you know, they can't do any kind of BDS, although they recently divested from the top 200 like carbon emission fossil fuel companies. So there is a kind of divestment that's possible on campus. In light of what you've just said, what would your response be to that kind of argument?
I would say that there's not really such a thing as neutrality in these types of things, right? Like if you were on the street and you were watching somebody get stabbed, right? If you stood there and did nothing, you would not be neutral. You would be complicit. How is this any different? How have we allowed ourselves to be removed so much from people and from the world that we are, you know? And it's not neutral, right? Because neutral would be not being involved at all. But there is involvement. There's a financial involvement, there's normalization ties with academic involvement. So even that neutrality is a mirage, it's an illusion, it's not really neutral.
And I'd like to also add that you mentioned the fossil fuels example, the big win that we had, 50 million just last semester. There's also the example of 1986, when we got McGill to divest from South African apartheid, and it was 50 million at the time, which adjusted to inflation today is about 140 million. So in fact, this was a much larger number. And so we think that 20 million is possible. And not only that, not only is it possible, it's a question of when and not if it's going to happen. And we want to make it happen now.
I hear that, and especially the South African divestment that happened, as far as I know, pretty quickly from when the campaign was started. But this has been a long time that the administration has been refusing to even hear questions of BDS. You know, they have threatened to withdraw money from the student society, basically, if they ratify votes in favor of BDS on that level. Even fossil fuel divestment, like it took over a decade since the campaign was started for McGill's Board of Governors to actually agree to divest. So, you know, it looks like an uphill battle. Just on the level of your campaign, I'm curious about, you know, how many people are involved, and if you can tell me more about what you have in place to keep each other safe during this.
So right now we have a dozen people, I would say, who are actively involved and heavily involved, right? We also have other people who are joining us, and we're very happy to have the support pouring in. And there's a lot of things that we are doing to keep people safe and secure, just in terms of, like, health for, say, the indefinite hunger strikers. We're heavily recommending that people, you know, get medical checks and make sure they have support, which is why some people are starting a bit later. We ask also that they fill a form where they acknowledge the risks and they understand what they are taking on, the responsibility that they are taking on. We also make sure to have a care team, as we talked about earlier, I believe. So the care team is there to support the people who are hunger striking on campus as they go around to keep them safe from harassment, from violence, and also just in case they faint. And for any reasons, we try to keep a support system and a network. And, you know, we are independent students. We are functioning on our own, but we do try to build a sort of community where people can rely on each other and help each other.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, the threat of harassment and violence. Have you guys faced harassment? I know you've been outside the James Administration Building and in Red Path Library. You know, especially the latter location, there's a lot of through traffic there. What is the response that you've been getting from the on-campus community?
In general, I think we've gotten a lot of positive feedback, overwhelmingly positive feedback, but there have been some exceptions from the work that we started doing. Online, we got a couple creepier messages. For example, when we started Hunger Strike, people asking, will there be food at the event? We got literally spat on yesterday or during our first sit-in in front of the administration building.
And today as well.
Oh.
This happened 2 days in a row. We don't know if it's the same person, really. This has happened twice. They go by really quickly and just spit on us and go. Sorry.
But no, that's like kind of hard to imagine, but it's like good to talk about because I think most people wouldn't probably believe that anyone would treat anybody else like that, even, you know, despite this difference in opinion. But I guess, you know, you say it's been overwhelmingly positive. I've heard that you have also heard from McGill administration. What has that response been like?
Essentially, we sent them an email telling them that students have been asking for this and we are going on hunger strike, informing them of our hunger strike. And almost immediately the next day, so yesterday, we got a response from them telling us that, well, you know, we have a right to express ourselves, we should worry about our safety, but they'd like to come sit down and meet with us. And we've sort of come to the conclusion, and this hasn't been announced yet, but we don't think that we would like to meet them behind closed doors under any circumstances. We think that if there's a meeting, it should be a public meeting, that all the pro-Palestine groups on campus, or even all students, should be invited, because this is a public concern, because a majority of students have already voted in support of a divest and boycott policy. So we're just part of that movement, and we would like for all students to be there if there's any meetings at all. We would like for all them to be public. And also just because any closed-door conversation that might happen will inevitably benefit the authority, right? That's always how it works. It weakens democratic movements. Any closed-door negotiations, backdoor negotiations, weaken democratic movements and benefit those in authority, giving them an upper hand. So we will not meet with them unless it's a public meeting open to all.
You know, if you don't hear back from them, I guess, what are the next steps? Do you have a plan in place to kind of, you know, up the ante so that this becomes an issue that McGill just can't ignore?
Well, we're going to be increasing in number, hopefully. We're going to be increasing our presence on campus as time goes along. Obviously, our deteriorating health in itself is going to be a pressure on McGill. But also, we are calling for a larger strike on university, a general strike. We have a pledge form that's up on our Linktree. And this is something that we do not necessarily want to lead. We want to do it in cooperation with other groups on campus. But people can already start filling that out to show their interest. And we think that if that were to happen, this would be the most direct way to get McGill to listen to our demands. Just simply students not showing up to class and doing so all the way until the end of the semester, not, you know, one or a few days at a time, but indefinitely as well. So general strikes are, if it is possible, it would be the strongest tool in our arsenal as students, as a community, I think.
Yeah, so you mentioned that folks can sign up to strike. What are other ways that people on campus or in Montreal more broadly can support you? Because obviously this is like something that will take not just a physical toll, but also takes an enormous amount of like mental strength. What are ways that people who support this campaign can show up for the hunger strikers at McGill?
I mean, the main thing, like, we have a link tree that is available with like forums and such things. Also just, you know, sharing, reposting and bringing attention to it, and, you know, putting pressure on McGill to divest, to listen to the students, right? This is going to be This is going to be a fight for us, but if people who are not ex-students, parents that are concerned, if all these people start showing up and, you know, and putting pressure in their own ways by, you know, making their opinions, their dissent with McGill's decisions so far publicly known, then there will be more pressure. Obviously, this is really a pressure game, right? We cannot make them do anything. We just hope that we have enough people pressuring them to, so that they end up following through with these demands.
Thank you both for coming on CQUT, for talking about this work. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CKUT.ca on the web. This was On Things McGill. It is 11:55, so it is time for me to say goodbye, to wish you all a great day and a good week. We're going to finish up with some music, and as always, the playlist is on our website, CKUT.ca. On the page for All Things McGill. Right now, we're going to hear Outer League by the Future Kings.
Shorty wanna know if she could roll with the team. Told her she could kick it if she count on my green. I'ma fuck her one time, put that dick in the spleen. But I can't fall in love cause I'm too young for rings. Niggas pillow talking like they want it with me. I'ma call my brothers but they told on them beams. So to take a step back cause you not in my league. Cause we ballin' in the mall, bitch, I'm dropping them threes. Shorty wanna know if she could roll with the team. Told her she could kick it if she count on my green. I'ma fuck her one time, put that dick in the spleen. But I can't fall in love cause I'm too young for rings. Niggas pillow talking like they want it with me. I'ma call my brothers but they told on them beams. So to take a step back cause you not in my league. Cause we ballin' in the mall, bitch, I'm dropping them threes. Hey,
Renzo got knots. Clip longer than a fucking Tucson. I'm the man who gon' tell me I'm not. Go and grab a fan for the boy, Shawty wet like the ocean. I just wanna ride the wave down under. She miss independent, I can take none from her. Only thing I probably take is her number. Feeling good off the wood like lumber. Renzo too hot like summer. Shawty bad and she sweet like sugar. Yeah, she know I don't want none from her. I got bands like a band got drums. Ay. If you know what I'm saying, we them boys with the plan. If you not with your man, go ahead, take my hand. We gon' hop in this flight, callin' back when we land. Got our feet in the sand. Ay.
Shorty wanna know if she could roll with the team. Told her she could kick it if she count on my green. I'ma fuck her one time, put that dick in the spleen. But I can't fall in love cause I'm too young for rings. Niggas pillow talking like they want it with me. I'ma call my brothers but they told on them beams. Told us take a step back cause you not in my league. Cause we ballin' in the mall but I'm dropping them threes. Shorty wanna know if she could roll with the team. Told her she could kick it if she count on my green. I'ma fuck her one time, put that dick in the spleen. But I can't fall in love cause I'm too young for rings. Niggas pillow talking like they want it with me. I'ma call my brothers but they told on them beams. Yeah, take a step back cause you not in my league. Cause we ballin' in the mall but I'm dropping them threes. Lil shorty wanna kick it like Luke Kang. But I'm chillin' with my bloods like a tooth fang. Just fucked it up, it will fill on a Tuesday. Don't say nothing to me, today is my rude day. If I come through in there, you know that it's doomsday. Took her ass to Mars, call me Bruno, I'm a smooth man. Told her driller, back it up, I don't do pants. Then I bet you shorty back it up for the cool man. Still grinding, still shining, still blowing. Niggas still crazy, don't blame me, still told him. I'ma think I made it, but she don't even know it. Soon as I'm rich, paper out in that rover. Niggas always talking luck, where's the clover? All my niggas blessed, cause you down like a mower. I ain't leaving from the party till it's over. Lil' so hit home runs, lil' so bitch. Shorty wanna know if she could roll with the team. Told her she could kick it if she count on my green. I'ma fuck her one time, put that dick in the spleen. But I can't fall in love cause I'm too young for rings. Niggas pillow talking like they want it with me. I'ma call my brothers but they told on them beams. So to take a step back cause you not in my league. Cause we ballin' in the mall, bitch, I'm dropping them threes. Shorty wanna know if she could roll with the team. Told her she could kick it if she count on my green. I'ma fuck her one time, put that dick in the spleen. But I can't fall in love cause I'm too young for rings. Niggas pillow talking like they want it with me. I'ma call my brothers but they told on them beams. So to take a step back cause you not in my league. Cause we ballin' in the mall, bitch, I'm dropping them threes.
Somehow I'm tearing up my on this.